I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. With more women than ever before jumping into the political fray, we continue our occasional series about women in politics with Jennifer Palmieri. She was Hillary Clinton's communications director in the 2016 presidential campaign and White House communications director for President Obama. Palmieri's new book, Dear Madam President, is an open letter to the woman who eventually will do what Secretary Clinton was unable to do, break the glass ceiling of the U.S. presidency. In what ways did Secretary Clinton's gender affect the outcome of the last election, and how will it inform politics in the Me Too midterms? Plus, a conversation with Norma Perra. She's retiring after nearly 40 years in the dance department at the Baltimore School for the Arts. Jennifer Palmieri joins me when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall, a Fairweather Caps fan, and I know there are many of you out there. So congratulations to the Caps, and thanks for joining us. You know, many are calling this year's midterm election cycle the Year of the Woman. After the 2016 elections, tens of thousands of women contacted Emily's List to inquire about running for office. By some estimates, nearly 500 did decide to run for local office, state houses, and Congress. Today, another installment in our occasional series on women in politics. Last month, I spoke with Donna Brazil, the former interim chair of the Democratic National Committee. Earlier this week, I spoke with Amy Chozick, who covered Hillary Clinton for almost 10 years as a reporter for The Wall Street Journal and The New York Times. Today, my guest is Jennifer Palmieri. She was the communications director for Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign and the White House communications director for President Barack Obama. She's also a former national press secretary for the Democratic Party, the press secretary during John Edwards' 2004 presidential campaign, and she served in the Clinton White House as well. Jennifer Palmieri is now the president of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Her new book is a reflection on Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign and a shout out to the women who will do what Secretary Clinton was unable to do, break the glass ceiling at the White House. It's called Dear Madam President, an open letter to the women who will run the world. Jen Palmieri, it's great to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
So are you a Caps fan as well?
I'm also a fair weather Caps fan, and the weather is quite lovely.
That's right.
So I'm a big fan.
Couldn't be more lovely than last night.
I actually got to go to the game on, my husband and I went on Saturday night.
Yeah.
And it was exhilarating. It was a really amazing thing to be able to be part of.
Yeah, great.
I'm really happy for them.
So I want to ask you first about your aspiration for this book.
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot of folks have written about this very peculiar, historic, unexpected, shocking election in 2016.
Right.
There are those, including yourself, you write in your book that it's frustrating as a campaign staffer, is that in that the campaign books are usually written by folks who observed the campaign but weren't part of it.
Right.
You, of course, were part of it.
Right.
You could make the argument that that makes you eminently qualified or perhaps completely disqualified to
mm-hmm.
have an objective view of mm-hmm. it. But what did you, I mean, your boss, Ms. Mm-hmm. Secretary Clinton, wrote a book she calls What Happened. It seems to me you were trying to do something a bit more than just explain what happened.
Yeah, and I don't think there is anything. I don't know that there is such a thing as objective views anymore. Hillary's book was What Happened, and I think of my book as What Do We Do About It. I didn't want to do a campaign book that relived moment by moment and tactical decisions that we make, because I don't think that there's much for people to learn about that. I believe that we are living in a very different world now than we did in 2016. I certainly see the world very differently. And what I wanted to come out of that experience, where I did feel that I had learned a lot, was something positive. And I felt that I did have a particular seat from which to see obstacles that women do still face, as much progress as we have made, and even accepting that Hillary, in getting more votes than Trump did, in some ways proved women could win. I do believe that's possible, but I thought I had a pretty good sense of some of these obstacles that are still in our way, and lessons from my own experience, too, that I could share with women and however to help them however it is they choose to engage in the world, whether that's through their own families, communities, work, politics.
It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest is Jennifer Palmieri. Her new book is called Dear Madam President, An Open Letter to the Women Who Will Run the World. We are, by the way, streaming our conversation on the WIPR Facebook page, and a little bit later in the program, we'll take your calls and emails and tweets. You talk about how women can lead in a new way, a way that is it's a new model of leadership in our image, not a man's.
Right.
What were those? What do those two models look like? How do they differ?
So I think what I had a realization very late in the campaign, in probably October of 16. And I remember a very particular moment sitting on the tarmac in Florida. And I thought, it just occurred to me that what we had done in the course of the campaign was turned Hillary into a female facsimile of the qualities that we look for in a male president. Okay, and it was a gut punch because I thought that is a fundamental flaw in the design. Right? It's something you have to go back to square one to fix, which you're not going to do in October. I still thought she was going to win, but it was the first time for me anyway that I saw really clearly, boy, having a woman president is going to, she is going to have to be the model by which other leaders that come after her in this country follow. And that's a big deal, a lot of pressure, and something you need to put a lot of thought into. And the way I look at it now, I think that Hillary's generation, baby boomer generation, right, women of her generation who broke so many glass ceilings, they had, as one friend of mine said, who was in commercial real estate, I had to dress like a girl, think like a man, and work like a dog to get ahead, right? It's a pretty good summary of their experience. And I feel that they proved that they could do the job just the same as and as well as any man, right? No allowances need to be made. Nothing would be different, right? Well, things should be different, right? I said, it shouldn't matter whether or not you can, whether you're a man or woman, as long as you can do a job. And I just don't really think that's true. It does matter if you're a man or a woman. If you're a woman, you are going to bring different skills to it.
I mean, is it a matter of, like, they talk about letting Trump be Trump. Is it a matter of letting Hillary be Hillary? Are you second guessing yourself about whether or not you were able to let Hillary be Hillary?
We were definitely not able to let Hillary be Hillary. I don't think that was possible for the first woman. I think the first woman had to blaze this trail. And I think what you can learn from that trail is, and that's one of the things I hope to do from the book is say, look at all the things that happened to her and let's consider them. So the next time a woman runs for president and you hear things like, Kirsten Gillibrand, I don't know. There's something about her I just don't like. Or Elizabeth Warren, I don't know. There's something about her I just don't like. You're going to look back at Hillary's experience and think, well, that's the same thing everybody said about her. Let's get at the root of what's behind that. And I don't think we really had any other option because there's no model. You needed to prove that she could do the job as the president. It's just that there are so many male qualities that we associate with that role. A woman, and it's uncharted territory. I don't have a checklist of here are the five things that women should do differently to show that to lead as women as opposed to men. I just think that my best advice to women is trust your confusion. When something doesn't feel quite right to you in the workplace and you think that doesn't really work for me, you're right. The workplace wasn't created with you in mind. It's been around for centuries. Politics have been around for centuries too. And they were built by men to be comfortable places for them. And it doesn't mean that all men are trying to hold women back. I have never felt that in my own career. But it does mean that there are some customs and traditions that don't make sense for you. And, I feel crying at work is one of the big examples I use in the book.
You recommend it.
I do. I'm somebody who's very easily moved to tears. I'm watering up right now, but that's because I have to cough. There probably will be a moment where I well up with tears in this interview. I usually do. But it is, when you tell women, that's like considered the big workplace sin for a woman, right? I was talking to this one woman recently, a White House reporter who said she cried once at the White House and she felt that she'd been exposed, which is such a telling word, right? What that shows me is she thinks that being a woman is still something I have to overcome to prove I belong here. That's what's like at the root of it. And I just think if you're easily moved to tears as I am, when I'm talking about something that really matters to me, it's probably something I should say and it's something other people should want to here. And what I think now, and some of these sort of outdated rules don't just apply to women, I think they hold men back too. And what I think we want now is for everybody to bring their whole selves to whatever, however it is they engage in the world. And whether that's through work or politics, what have you. And that's, you know, that's what I wrote. You know, the book is short. You can read it in a few hours. And it's my experiences and what I've observed both in politics, but also in, you know, hard life stuff. My sister passed away last year from early onset Alzheimer's, and it's about that journey too. But I want people to read it and then see what it brings up for them in imagining how they want to engage in the world differently.
Well, for the record, I cried in this very chair on Tuesday. We were doing a story about foster children, and it was heart-wrenching.
There's
and,
a lot
and
of stories
Luke Spicknall, our director and engineer, cries every day at noon when we have to start this program. And thinks, oh, my God, another disaster about to happen. So just for the record.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to cry about children, state of children in America today, that's for sure.
So misogyny is one of several things that people point to as a reason for Secretary Clinton not prevailing in the election. There's Comey. There's Russia. There's misogyny. There's the ineptitude of Robbie Mook. A lot of people very mad at him and his the strategy that he advocated for during the thing, the reliance on data. There are people who saw shortcomings with the candidate herself. There are people who were mad at you for what they described as an inadequate communications message, never being clear about, you know, the overriding reason for her to be the president. So people had a whole bunch of ideas about why this happened. I wonder, in the, you know, this is the week that we passed the 500th day of the Trump administration. So we've had a while for this to sink in. Do you think of those reasons and perhaps others in any hierarchical form? Do you think there's one overwhelming, overriding reason that are followed by the others? Are they all sort of an equal mix? How do you view it now?
I think that they're probably an equal mix, but most of the things that you noted aren't very, you know, I don't think time spent on some of those is not something we're going to learn from. I often, for example, get asked.
You don't think so? I mean, the current crop wouldn't repeat whatever the mistakes were?
I think that there's some are and some aren't. You know, I get asked a lot, why didn't you go to Wisconsin and Michigan more? It's like, well, if, you know, if we thought that we were in trouble, we would have. You know, maybe what we should have done, I think something that we could have done differently tactically that could have mattered and is a lesson for Democrats going forward is invest time, money, and resources in Arizona, Texas, and Georgia and do that early on, like starting in 2015, right? But even if we had won Wisconsin and Michigan, we lost Pennsylvania, and we put everything we had in that. It wouldn't have mattered. See, I mean, that's like my point. It's just, it's, I think that what I worry about, what I think, the further I get away from the election, what I see, you know, any number of factors could have changed and Hillary could have easily won. Even if she had won, I don't see that there's some parallel universe where there's a utopia where everything is perfect because Hillary Clinton is president. This election was the beginning of the reckoning that we are living through now. And what I saw in that campaign, I went to almost every state in the country. And it was not, I think we think about it as sort of a reaction from people who supported President Trump. That's the election about. But I saw frustration roiling to the surface across the board, from, you know, Black Lives Matter protesters to Dreamers to women. It is, I think what we are coming to terms with at a fundamental level is, you know, not just three decades of wages not growing, but at the core of the founding of the country, we are found on this great premise that everyone was created equal. If you're white, a man, and owned land. And a lot of people were disenfranchised in that process. And that bill has come due. I mean, that is like at a fundamental level, I really believe that is what this is all about. And what the internet has made possible is now everyone has a platform to be heard. And so whereas we only, you know, I myself in my own life only saw a shockingly small number of perspectives, right? Dangerously small. And now I'm able to hear more. And the one unifying positive thing I can say about the state of America is that I do see with all of these populations that are so upset and frustrated is I think each of them seems to believe America could and should be better than it is today. And if we all believe that we're not living up to our best ideal, but it's possible, that's somewhere to start. So, you know, that's what I think about every day. More, and I think Donald Trump is disruption come to politics to prove it is all broken. It is all broken. I mean, just look at Congress, and I can stop talking there, and everyone understands what I mean. So I think politics has to be revitalized, and it's going to happen at the grassroots level. It's not going to happen, you know, from, you know, the DNC does great work on the, you know, on the ground and helping to build state parties and helping candidates with tools and all. But, you know, the answers aren't going to come from Washington, right? They're going to come from the candidates that the record number of candidates that are running. That's where I get encouraged. And that's what I think the future is. I don't think we still appreciate how much politics, the universe have changed. And I think a lot of practitioners still think that the old sort of rules of politics apply, and I just don't believe they do.
We'll talk about some of those rules and how they might be changed when we come back from a quick break. Jennifer Palmieri was communications director for Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign. She was also the White House communications director during the Obama administration. Her new book is called Dear Madam President, An Open Letter to the Women Who Will Run the World. You're welcome to join our conversation when we come back. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, to send us a tweet @MiddayWIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. By the way, we are streaming on the Facebook page at WIPR. You can catch us there as well. And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up next week on our program, the latest of our conversations with the candidates. Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby joins me on Monday. She's running for re-election in the primary against two opponents. She will be my guest for the hour Monday here on Midday. Later today, Norma Parra will join me. She heads the dance department at the Baltimore School for the Arts. She's about to retire after 39 years on the faculty at the acclaimed Public Arts High School. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jennifer Palmieri. She was the communications director for Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign and the White House communications director for President Obama. She's the author of a new book called Dear Madam President, An Open Letter to the Women Who Will Run the World. Ms. Palmieri will be appearing at the Books in Bloom Festival in Columbia on Sunday. You're welcome to be part of our conversation today. 410-662-8780. Our email midday@wipr.org to send us a tweet @MiddayWIPR, to follow me on Twitter @TomHallWIPR. You can also catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. Jennifer Palmieri, why do you think it is that the United States, the electorate, seems to still struggle and with envisioning a woman as president of the United States? It hasn't been a problem in so many other places around the world. Why is it? And you even talk to yourself, you talk in the book about your ambivalence about stressing gender in this campaign and how it may or may not differ than 2008. And you know, Secretary Clinton seemed ambivalent about it too in certain ways.
Right.
Why is that?
I didn't think that, I say that in the book that I didn't think it was a big deal or going to be that hard that we were electing the first woman president. It's not how I thought about the race. I just thought that Hillary was the best person for the job. And we elected the first black president, and that seemed to me to be a much harder thing given the history of race in America than electing the first woman president. We were like on a progressive path, and, you know, we would have a woman president and it would probably be Hillary and great. And I just see it. The deeper we got into it and dealt with some of the email story, and when you hear things like there's something about her I just don't like, there's something about her I just don't trust, suspicion around her, that just didn't seem rational. And you know, in the extreme cases like the lock her up chance, or, you know, it's just not what happens to other candidates. I just came to appreciate that.
So, for example, the email story and the way those all got conflated, because there's a whole difference between the DNC emails and Podesta's emails.
That was
and
just like more of our bad luck.
The server in Chappaqua. But do you think that they were specific to the secretary as a woman?
I do. I think that I really believe that with all my soul and at my very core, believe that emails was all, that was the way in which unease about a woman and ambition was manifested itself. And I'll give you an example of it. You know, I would say to press, who there was a constantly moving target about what, you know, questions she needed to answer. And she keeps, I think there's a sense that she never answered questions about emails, and that in itself is telling, because she answered dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of questions about emails, and it was never good enough. And I think at the core of it, you know, people, I'd ask the press about it, and they would say, well, you know, why did she do it? You say, why she did it? Well, like, why did she really do it? And I, you know, and I would say to them, well, if let's reverse, let's say she won in 08, President Obama was Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton was president, President Barack Obama was Secretary of State, had presidential ambitions, had a personal email account. Would you have the same questions for him? Well, no. Well, why do you have them for her? Because she's always so sketchy. She's doing it again.
Colin Powell had a personal email account.
Yeah. Yes. So,
when he was Secretary of State?
When he was Secretary of State. John Kerry used a personal email account when he was Secretary of State, after Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. So I think that it is, you know, and they would justify their suspicion about her on the fact that they have been suspicious about her for so long. And, you know, I've sat with that for a really long time, and I know it's a controversial thing to say, but I really believe that's what's at the core of it. And it doesn't mean that everybody who had doubts about her or even didn't vote for her because they were uneasy about her and emails are sexist. It's just, I think that she vexes us. She confounds us. We don't know what to think of her. There's something about her we just don't like.
I think it's because
for 40 years, she has been stepping outside of the role that women normally play. From when she was a senior in college, and she gave that challenging commencement address at Wellesley, and she ended up on the cover of Life magazine, and she was the face of the female face of baby boomer generation. And then she was Bill Clinton's wife, who didn't change her name and eventually did after, like, the public was uneasy about that. And then she didn't stay home and bake cookies. And then she was the first lady who took on health care, the, like, third rail of American politics, and then ran for Senate. And she was always just stepping right outside of the line that women are.
And she was always, you know, certainly being attacked from all sorts of places.
Yeah, right, and that leaves scars.
What about the folks who say that there was the dimension of her inscrutability, that it was very difficult for people to really know who she was?
Yes,
the most covered and famous woman in the world,
somehow
she ends up being inscrutable to people.
Yes, Tom.
And you're a communications person, so how does that happen?
Because we don't know what to make of a woman in power like that, because we have no model in our head. And I did not appreciate what a big deal it is, how you really, really need a model in your head to be able to imagine this. And, you know, you talked about other countries have done this, right? Other countries have female
whole
leaders.
Bunch.
Most of them have parliamentary systems. And that's an easier deal for women, I think, because you are elected leader of the party from a relatively small number of individuals in the low hundreds. And, you know, that's like Hillary in the Senate. Imagine that, right? She was really popular in the Senate. If you had a contest for who was going to be the head of the Senate, I bet Lindsey Graham and John McCain probably would have voted for her. And then you go before the country as a ticket, as a government, as a party, and you're electing that whole. It's not just about the individual. In our system, it just has an extra hurdle. Also, in the United Kingdom, they have queens. They had three, Victoria, Elizabeth, and Elizabeth, three revered women that were a part of their nation's story. And no, those women weren't selected. They were monarchs. And but still, there's a way to think of women in power and women having played an important role in that country's history. Hillary always would say to me, I lived on the campaign. She didn't I don't have a story. She would literally say that. I do not have a story. My husband has a story. Barack Obama has a story. I don't have a story. Because we don't, there's no.
But what about models, for example, in business? There are women CEOs. There's not a
not
lot.
A lot.
Them. There's not a lot, but there are women CEOs.
There are women. It's an abomination CEOs they are. And you know what? It's not going to change because businesses have to be very different in order for women to succeed in them. What I really think is going to happen, that number is going to change when the generation of women who are starting businesses now, when the number of businesses that are started by women begins to have a major impact on what industry as a whole looks like. I feel like that's when that's really going to change because, you know, this is hundreds of years. We're pushing against all of human history here.
Let's go to email. Chris emails, the messaging from the Clinton campaign was very frustrating to me. The advertising seemed to focus on being nice to groups, the disabled, Muslims. I watched this feeling like I was watching a losing strategy. Do you have any regrets about your contribution to this strategy? First of all, do you accept Chris's assessment of the strategy about being nice? Because you do write about this in the book, in that people have a problem with Secretary Clinton or any woman who has the ambition to be in charge.
Right.
And your polling showed that it's best for, couching Secretary Clinton's ambition expressed in her desire to serve others.
Yeah, that is, you got to meet voters where they are, right? And that's where they were with a woman seeking office. They have different questions for women candidates and male candidates. And for female candidates, there's a lot of questions about what their motivation is about. You know, this is what the research told us. And so suggested to us that we always need to present what she had done in her past as trying of being in service to others and what she wanted to do as president, being in service to others. This is what, in terms of like his broader question about messaging, we understood, I think, better, certainly better than we get credit for and better than most people, because I lived it, that we saw how frustrated America was and disaffected. And it was very distressing. And it was very distressing to both of the Clintons. And they saw it in the fall of 2015, and they had never seen anything like it. And the question is, what do you do about it? And we tried early on in the Democratic primary, going to places in Appalachia and, you know, some of the tougher places for Democrats in Pennsylvania as two examples, to talk to voters that, you know, probably ended up being Trump voters. And you know what? They could not hear her. And it was really distressing. I'd never seen anything like it in American politics. And, you know, I talked to her about it and I said, man, you know, they cannot hear you. It is way too late. It is way too late to be trying to talk to these voters now. And I don't say that was way too late in our campaign.
Why wasn't it too late for Trump then? Because he seemed to
Because he had the message that they wanted to hear. He told them a story of America that they believed. He told them a story of America that gave validation to their point of view. I think Democrats discount how important that is. You know, a lot of Democrats discount the controversy, you know, Donald Trump's fight with the NFL over the anthem. And, you know, again, the anthem is national anthem, something that moves me to tears. It's something that moves a lot of, you know, Trump voters to tears too. And that is, it's so important to them. And we discount that as like a silly, you know, a lot of Democrats can discount that as something that doesn't matter. You know, I have a lot of friends who will say, I don't understand Trump voters. Their lives aren't any better. You know, so a lot of people are doing better financially, but not them. And, you know, they don't get it. They're being hoodwinked. And I say, you don't understand it. Like, their lives are better because Donald Trump is president. They are happier. They feel like their life has value. They feel like their life has a purpose that it didn't before. They are vindicated. And that is a huge value to people.
And in retrospect, was there a value that Secretary Clinton could have suggested for them?
No, the other side? We tried. We tried. They could not hear her. It was too late. That was it. So then what do? Then you run the only race you can do, right? So then you're like, all right.
That's too bad, because Hillary Clinton is great with a group of people who don't agree with her. She will hang in there. She will work it, you know, and she wins people over. That's her history. If you look at her history in New York, her history in the Senate working with Republicans. And so I thought, great, this is Hillary Clinton at her best. And it couldn't be done. So then you run the race so you can run. You know, so then you run the race where you try to get out as many people as possible who are already with you.
And not try to do too much persuading.
Well, we tried to do persuading. We just failed at it, right? It just it wasn't there. And we continued to try. And we continued to do a lot of television ads. I mean, most of the people who are listening to this would not have lived in states that got the ads. But, you know, ran a lot of ads on the economy, and they just didn't go anywhere. Because I think the other problem was, you know, Hillary Clinton had a very thoughtful economic plan that was designed to raise wages and kind of get at that problem. And I think people probably heard it and thought, you can't get that done. You can't get that done with Congress. And I can't really argue with that. You know, Congress is dysfunctional. So I think that we also had a big credibility
problem. But there was
problem.
Trump promising the moon, and he wasn't going to get any of that stuff
done
either.
But I think people believed
the wall and Mexico and all that.
But people believed that a lot of his supporters, I think, believed, let's try something different. You know, maybe we got to blow the whole thing up. And he's something very different, and maybe that will work. And I understand why that could be appealing.
Jennifer Palmieri, her new book is called Dear Madam President, An Open Letter to the Women Who Will Run the World, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. We are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWIPR. Jerry on Facebook asks, what about the prospects for a female president in 2020? Mm-hmm. And who do you think would be the future candidate? And he mentions Kamala Harris from California.
Mm-hmm. I think a female...
I mean, has the situation changed that much since
2016? Look, Hillary almost won, and she got 3 million more votes. I don't think... I think it's very possible for a woman to be elected president of the United States. And I think it's possible that it could happen as early as 2020. And I think that there are any number of women, from Kamala Harris to Claire McCaskill to Amy Klobuchar to Jean Shaheen to Maggie Hassan to Elizabeth Warren to Kirsten Gillibrand. Did I say Amy Klobuchar already? There are a lot of women. Any one of the women I just named could easily be the Democratic nominee to President of the United States.
When I talked to Donna...
Not easily, I should say. Because nothing's easy.
Yeah, right.
Even for men, it's not easy.
That's relative,
But yes.
Donna Brazile told me that by her count, there are about 54 different Democrats giving serious thought to running for president, many of them women. Is that going to be too diffuse a group? And is that going to be difficult?
It's going to be what it's going to be. And it's probably going to be a big number of people... And it'll be difficult, but that is how democracy works. And, you know, the Republicans, you can't control it. You can't control it from Washington. That's for darn sure. And, you know, the Republicans had a really big contentious primary, too, and they won in 2016.
The thing that surprised me the most reading this book was your statement relatively early in the book, in which you say that Secretary Clinton came into this race with some reluctance.
Yeah.
And more than anyone would have imagined. She felt unease throughout the campaign, and we all kept telling her it would be fine. So she was even reluctant to get in because people had thought, no, she wanted to be president back in 2008 and nothing's changed, and she mm-hmm. still wants to be president, you know, 8 years later. Describe her reluctance.
I think that because she's been Hillary Clinton her whole life, right? And she's been Hillary Clinton in her adult life and lived and knows how the press and the public can react to her. And I'm not sure. I think it's when yourself that's living through it, it's hard to be objective about it. But she knew enough to know that it was going to be harder than everybody was telling her. And she ultimately, and also, you know, she had been Secretary of State for 8 years. That was a really, you know, it was an exhilarating but tough time, too. And she had a pretty nice life.
Not 8 years.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. 4 years. Yeah. And wasn't sure she wanted to do this. And she eventually did it because she believed that she was the person best positioned to win. And she was confident in her ability to do the job. And that's why she ultimately did it. But on my first day of the campaign, she did sit me down and sort of vomited up what it had been like to be her for the last, you know, 25 plus years, going back to when her husband first ran for office
as governor of Arkansas, and just laid out everything that had happened, the times when the press liked her and didn't. And, you know, she tries to listen to criticism. She always says, I try to listen to it, not taking it personally, but see if there's something I can learn from it. So I would change my behavior to try to reflect what I thought, people were responding to, and, you know, just was sort of bewildered by it all. And she said, I don't have really any answers, but I just want you to be aware of it because you're going to have to deal with this. And, you know, at the end she said, I'm just a simple and serious person and I don't understand why I provoke such rage in people. And I just, you know, it's like she is, that's it's just my first, you know, real window into how this, you know, why that caricature of her develops.
You talked about how she was reluctant to tell her story, not even thinking she had a story, although she, you know, announced her campaign on her mother's birthday and or announced her acceptance of the nomination, I guess, on her mother's birthday, which happened to be the day that women's suffrage was passed.
It's remarkable.
I mean, the confluence of that historical thing is quite something. But you said that we've learned to stop searching for where we fit into history, talking about women in politics, because we are writing our own story. So what is the story that Stacey Abrams in Georgia will write? Or here in Maryland, we have two women running for governor, one a Sri Lankan, another an African-American. When we talk about their stories and the fact that Secretary Clinton evidently didn't think her story was interesting enough, should these women think about running a story-based campaign? Is the story the thing that's going to get them over the hurdle?
It's not, because you should believe that your story has value and you should tell it. The problem for Hillary, I was sort of stunned when she said, I don't have a story. But I came to appreciate what she meant, which is, I think in our leaders, we like their biographies to reflect elements of the American dream, right? So you can see that with both President Clinton and President Obama. And women just haven't been part of that story. And I think that, you know, so there, you know, so we felt like we needed to find other ways to try to connect Hillary to the country's history so that people had a way to think about her and be comfortable with it. So, you know, the women, I mean, this is what happens to the people who make history, right? They are misunderstood in real time. And what I try to tell women is, particularly women who run for office, don't be disturbed when it seems that they don't quite get you, because it doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. It just means you're something new. And, you know, trust in your know at your core who you are, and just try to be that person. And you're going to get criticized, but that doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. It just means you are being you and doing something different. And the women that are, you know, I think, you know, Hillary is going to, you know, I think she will have a revered place in American history. I believe that. And I, you know, think Stacey Abrams is going to win in November, and she will too. And the women that follow them, that's who we will have as models to, you know, help guide us.
And we're running out of time, so I just have time for one more question. And that has to do with the extent to which Secretary Clinton could have changed the conversation about her. I mean, you mentioned that this 40 years of scrutiny and, you know, public persona that was very difficult in some quarters. But Amy Chozick was on the show. And, of course, you worked closely with Amy Chozick because she covered the campaign. You're the communications director. You certainly know who she is and what she's all about. And she makes the point, and I'd love for you to respond to it, that it was up to the Clinton campaign to come up with the narrative or the story that changed the dialogue away from emails. I question Amy about that, because I'm not sure. I mean, I think as journalists, it's up to us to ask the questions that we think are important. But how do you respond to her notion that you all didn't do a good enough job changing the conversation?
Yeah, I mean, it was impossible. I think that, you know, as I said before, that it was for the first woman, a lot of this was destined, and there was going to be some issue, which was the manifestation of unease about and suspicion around a woman. And that's what, you know, emails were. And I really, something I really fault the press for. I mean, among the institutions that are broken in our politics, the press, I put them at the top of the list in terms of treating politics like it's a game, focusing on process, making voters feel disengaged from the issues because they don't focus on issues that actually affect people's lives. I really hold them accountable. And, you know, the problem with the Clinton campaign, we had to look for, we were always under scrutiny like that unless we were in a direct firefight with Trump, which is what we always try to do in order to be able to drive what the differences were. But running against a candidate like Trump who's willing to be so controversial and in a press corps that was scrutinizing her more than him, it was difficult to have a lot of options.
We got to call it there. I appreciate your perspective.
It's my pleasure.
And good luck with the book. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Tom.
Jennifer Palmieri, her new book is called Dear Madam President, An Open Letter to the Women Who Will Run the World. She will be part of a panel discussion this Sunday afternoon at the Books in Bloom Festival that's on the lakefront in Columbia. She'll be part of a panel called From Casting Votes to Winning Votes, A History from Elizabeth Cady Stanton to Hillary Clinton. That begins at 12:15, and we've got a link with more information on our website, wypr.org/midday. Quick break, then a conversation with Norma Pera. She's retiring as the head of the dance department at the Baltimore School for the Arts after nearly 40 years. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Stick around.